Blog Talk.
This is Live Paranormal Radio, brought to you by LiveParanormal.com, the number one interactive online community for everything paranormal, horror, and sci-fi.
If so, call the studio line at 619. Do you have a question for Psychic Don? If so, call the studio line at 619-639-4600. Do you have a question for Psychic Don? If so, call the studio line at 619-639-4606 or log into the chat at liveparanormal.com. Ask Psychic Don Staggs your question now at 619-639-4606. TGAF TV Radio on liveparanormal.com with History FM.
All right, hello everybody. This is Jeff. We've been having some technical difficulties. Robert, if you're listening to this out there, the switchboard is dead. I repeat, the switchboard is dead. I can't get anything on here. I hope. Don, are you still here with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. If you want, I can go to my video and audio on the Live Paranormal and broadcast that way.
Okay, I think we're going to do fine here. I just called into the guest number. Phil, are you here?
I'm here.
All right. I think this is going to work, guys. We just got to be smarter than the technology, huh?
Yeah, there's always ways around things.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
All right, and we're being graced with Barry Doyle, the tech god. Welcome, Barry.
Everybody's got to bow down now.
You know, I can't take responsibility for this particular issue. It is out of my hands.
Well, Barry, you know, in the Great American Phenomena Hunt, you being the tech god, you are responsible. I'm sorry, but you are.
Well, I'm fine. I'm willing to be the target. I'll take the hit tonight.
Well, I want to welcome Don Staggs with us. Don is a good friend of mine. He goes by Psychic Don. And if anybody out there has any questions for Don, please call in. Looks like we can take one caller at a time now. Number is 619-639-4606. Welcome, Don. How you doing?
Pretty good. I've had this electronic problems happen around me before.
Yeah, you know what? I was gonna bring that up, Don, and I'm glad you just did. This is something just to let everybody know. If you know Don Staggs, this is something that happens when he's around. Seriously, electronics go crazy. Things just don't work right, and it seems like when he walks away, everything miraculously starts working. It's kind of strange. How often does that really happen, Don?
My dentist didn't want me to go near their CNC machine because it cost too much money, and they didn't want it to break down when I walked by.
Oh, geez. Well, Don,
you know
what we want
to
do tonight is just go over some stuff with you, ask you some basic questions, get to know Don Staggs and a little bit more about Psychic Don. Just to start off, how did you get started in paranormal? You know, what were the deciding factors that got you really interested in it to really start doing this professionally like you do now?
Well, probably the term professionally kind of refers to somebody making money and never make any money at it, so it's not much of a profession. Usually I just do it to help people and to help new groups starting out now. I got started in it. What kicked me into it was probably about 9 years, 8.5, 9 years ago when I was 50. Me and my wife traveling up the coast, and my close friends and family has always known about my abilities. We were driving up the 5, I believe, up heading towards Frisco that way. And my wife looked over and seen me crying. And at that time, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, so, you know, you can stick a knife in me, I ain't crying. And she wanted to know. She goes, why are you crying? And I go, well, it's a little boy and a little girl back there by the road. I go, well, I didn't see a boy and little girl by the road. I go, well, you wouldn't. They're dead. She goes, what do you mean? I go, well, I can still see him in my head, too. He was standing to her left. He was probably about 9 or 10. She was about 6 or 6 to 7. He was holding her hand, and they were standing there. I drove on and didn't stop to help him. So it kind of ate at me for almost a year because you know, I told my wife, I go, well, they had a car wreck. I go, I know. They had a car wreck. The parents survived, and they told the kids, if anything ever happens, you stand there and hold each other's hand and don't move, and we'll come back for you. So they were just waiting for them. And I didn't do anything to help them, and it just ate at me inside for almost a year. And then these shows came on with ghost hunters and dead famous and stuff like that. My wife asked me,
right.
She goes, doesn't this stuff happen to you all the time? And I go, honey, this is every day for me. So she told me, she goes, I think you should look into this, join a group, and get some answers. So I joined Orange County Ghost Hunters. I was their bloodhound. Going into the second year, I was a team leader. Third year, I owned the group, and I changed the name to OCPIT. So that's pretty much how I got started in the investigating part.
Cool. One thing, Mike Reck couldn't be here tonight, our co-host, Mike Reck Trainwreck, so we're going to kind of go over his questions that he had for you, too.
I seen him on earlier. I seen Trainwreck on earlier.
He's probably going to be in the chat room because he's working. He's a sleep tech, and he's running a service now up in Seattle. And he got called in when somebody calls off sick to work, he's the one that has to come in and fill the slot. So he's going to be in there working.
Since he can't talk right now, but he can hear us, that'd be a good time for me to bring up the grammatical and spelling errors in his questions that we saw. Or should we talk about that later, Jeff? Sorry, Mike. We'd love to hear what you say about that, but we know you're busy.
So you know what?
Thank you very much. So, Don, sorry, we didn't want to interrupt your interview, but from time to time, we just have to, you know, keep each other in line.
Yeah, I noticed you pick on him when he can't answer you back.
Absolutely.
Okay, Mike. Mike's first question is, do you remember the first time you realized that you were a psychic? And Don, I also want you to touch on the psychic-empath difference that you talk about a lot, and that not everybody could do what you do or see what you see. How did you come up with or come to grips with being different than everybody else and what you're seeing and what you're experiencing?
Well, this goes back to when I was 9 years old. I actually talked to my older sister today just to ask her for sure. I go, when did these things happen? Was I 9 or 10? And she said I was 9. Way back when I was a child, my grandparents' house down in Kentucky, it was a two-story log wall construction home. My grandma had already passed away. My grandfather was ill. We used to go stay in that house, and it was just haunted. So since I was a kid, I had seen these things, and things like doors opening and closing, smells, noises. But in the back bedroom of this place, on these old homes, there was no closets. In the corner, you would put a nail in each wall, string some baling wire between the two nails, put your clothes on hangers, and then put a white sheet over them. Well, this hung in the corner for the closet, and when I was like 9, it would start swinging back and forth. Now, the wire on the nails would squeak, and it would squeak out the song, Rock of Ages. I swear to you, it wasn't like, you know, a distant EVP Rock of Ages either. It was very plainly, you know, the whole song. And
I thought you were talking about Def Leppard Rock of Ages.
Yeah. Well, what happened with it was one day I was used to it happening and seeing it, and it would scare us. One day my mom was in that back room changing clothes. I was in the front room, and I heard her scream and come running out. At that time, my mom was a little rotund. And here she come running with not a stitch on through the house, screaming her head off. I went back in there, and the things were swinging and squeaking out Rock of Ages. And I remember I said, what are you trying to do, drive my mom crazy? I go, stop. The minute I said stop, it came to a photographic stop. It didn't slow down. It stopped in the middle of a swing, no motion. That's when I first determined, there's another thing out there, another space, another world, an afterlife, and it can hear me and can answer me. And from that time on, I started picking up on things, knowing things, sometimes knowing about people, knowing how they died and places where they died. And when it comes to the term sensitive or empath, I use that psychic word as just, you know, a label put on there. The empath part, I think, is really mostly what I do most of the time is I pick up on feelings. I'm empathic towards living or dead. And it's grown to the point over the years where I like to use empath, but I'll joke around and say psychic. Psychic is such a broad term that describes so many different abilities for so many different people. And I have just a couple of the range of abilities as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, Barry, you want to ask your question?
I only have one. Jeff.
You only have one?
Well, you said, Barry, do you want to ask your question? That sounded singular to me. You better get your sound effects. You better get your sound effects ready, pal. Hey, Don.
Well,
anyway,
yeah,
if
the switchboard would work correctly, I'd have probably been screaming.
Go ahead,
Don. Barry, ask your question.
I'm ready to ask my question. Jeff, did you just look in the mirror at yourself? So, Don, I want to first say thanks for being on and plus putting up with us tonight. I do have a couple of questions that I'm really intrigued to ask you. And the first thing I'd like to know, I think we touched base about the empath situation, because I was curious as to how you felt or why you refer yourself that way. So I'm going to move along. You had mentioned about your childhood. Now, did you mention your age exactly when you started noticing that you were different?
It was at 9 years old when that instance happened that, when I said for the clothes to stop, and they actually stopped when I said it. That's when I first realized that all of my dreams and feelings and stuff like that at that point were actually, connected to something. I could actually communicate with something.
Right. Okay. How did it affect your life? Did you notice things, how about in school, for instance, sitting in a classroom, do you have any memories of how that might have affected you when you were a student in a classroom and different from the other kids?
It really did. Back in that day, I'm saying in the 60s, when I was a kid and found out about, having these abilities, at first, I told my friends about it and stuff, and they thought, oh, cool, ghosts, things like that. I took a couple of them down to the house in Kentucky, and when they seen the clothes swing, they were, like, running out through the grass, And so I kind of thought, this is just normal. Everybody can do this. I had nobody at that time to explain to me that it wasn't normal, and all of a sudden, having these abilities used to make you an outcast. No one would want to have anything to do with you. They were afraid of you. You were crazy. So that's why I, at that time, in my early teen years, I probably decided this is not a good idea to tell anybody about this anymore. So I hid it. I denied it. And only my close friends and family knew my abilities. And that's why I say later on in life, just about nine years ago, when I seen in my mind, I seen these kids standing by the road, it really had a traumatic effect on me for the next year, knowing that I could have stopped and helped them move on, and I didn't.
So I also, while we're on talking with me asking the questions, I'm going to hit you with this. I'm very curious about how do you feel the role of technology versus I don't know how to refer to it with you except for your intuition. What do you think about that? Like, can technology used in paranormal investigation and paranormal research, do you feel that it can compete with the type of sensitivity you have? Is there information we can get with our devices that you're not able to get?
Yeah, there definitely is things that corroborate what you feel. That's pretty much what I'm one of those guys, I tell them, I go, I'm not that pure scientist skeptic that goes out there, I'm a cynic, I'm not that guy that goes out there, I'm going to prove everything is an electronic signal from McDonald's, and I'm not that psychic that goes out there and says, I know it all, I'm never wrong. I'm kind of in the middle. If I feel something, and I think that it's a certain way, I love to use the technology that we have at this time to try to get an answer to it, to see. Like when I'd go on investigations, I would walk in a lot of times without any information. I'd know what was going on and where. So when I first joined my team, I'd go into a place. I was the bloodhound. I'd walk over and tell them, we need to set the cameras up here. We need to record over here. This is where the action is. It's this bed in this corner. Sometimes the homeowners would kind of like go, well, how do you know? And then I go, well, I'm just like guessing at it, you know. But sometimes it's not always a good idea to let them know that you're using both technologies. But later on, when it became my team, I would tell people, yes, I do have some sensitive in some areas, and I do use that to help me set up the equipment. The technology, I think, is probably just has to go along with the intuition and the psychic side of it. They have to work together instead of fighting each other so that they can get answers. If you have a technology that's a recorder or a meter and it's getting readings, if you do a blind test where the guy that's a psychic on the other side can't see what it's doing and he can tell you when it's hitting levels, then that helps to prove he's real. And if he can tell you a spot where it's going to spike and you walk over with the meter and it spikes, then that, you know, they have to work together nowadays. I hope that answers it.
No, I think that I can appreciate your stance on it. There's just one thing that's going on in the paranormal field, and I definitely applaud your attitude with this, because I think that the way paranormal direction has gone is it doesn't fit. Obviously, paranormal investigation doesn't quite fit with the scientific method very well. There are some parallels, but they don't really, you know, there isn't any perfect way to utilize the scientific method because of the nature of the fact that we can't recreate things in a controlled environment yet, you know, enough to do that. So it's good to hear that somebody like yourself is looking at it that way. I feel like we can collect, the one thing we do collect with technology is data, hard numbers. You know, measurable numbers. As an empath or sensitive type, do you know if there's a way to actually measure what's going on? Have you ever partaken in any experiments or research?
I have. When using equipment, one time on the Queen Mary, I did an event, paid to go to the event, and Chris Fleming, who I think is a great guy, he's probably the only other psychic that I've ever met. When I shook his hand, he immediately knew that I was reading him, and I could feel him reading me. But with me and him on there, he had an ambient temperature gauge called an infrascan. And the first night I seen him use this infrascan and ask it in an area to go down. And it went down, it went down, it went down. Now, scientifically, there can be some kind of an answer for this. So the next night, I drove home from the Queen Mary. I got my infrascan. The next night, I showed up, and I go, Chris, do the infrascan again. He pulled it out to do it. As he asked his to go down out loud, I told him, I go, I'm not going to say anything. To myself, I asked mine to go up. It's a digital display. His went down a degree. Mine went up a degree. They both stopped when they were exact upside-down opposites. Meaning, I think mine stopped at 85.3 or 83, something like that. But whatever, when they stopped, mine was hot, his was cold, held in the same area. I had asked for mine to go hot. He had verbally asked for his to go cold. But when they stopped, I go, Chris, don't you notice? I turned mine upside down, and they're the exact same number that they went to when they were inverted. So technology right there was out to prove that we were getting an answer to what we asked for. Two like devices pointed in the same area should correspond exactly the same way, not go in different directions.
Okay. Well, I like where you're going with that, definitely, because obviously you do have a measurable, the experiment includes measurable variations. And now if that was to be, what would be cool is if that was actually repeated, you know, time and time again until we could exhaust the possibilities of coincidence. And I look forward to seeing that. I mean, I haven't seen that yet in mainstream media. You know, Jeff, I'm going to apologize for
boring tech stuff. We want to get to the juicy stuff. We want to get to
Jeff,
the good stuff.
I know that you watch South Park all day, and this was a little above the level that you're used to, but you wake up now.
Holy crap.
All right, I'm going to shut
up. Guys,
now.
We're going to take a 30-minute break here real quick. We'll be right back with Don Staggs, Psychic Don. You're on liveparanormal.com through History FM. We'll be right back.
Here.
Don't be scared. We're not ghosts yet. Be part of the show. Join the chat at liveparanormal.com with History FM. And don't forget to join the TGAF community at www.tgaf.tv. Be part of the great American Phenomena Hunt. TGAF TV Radio.
I'm so scared.
Do you have a question for Psychic Don? If so, call the studio line at 619-639-4606 or log into the chat at liveparanormal.com. Ask Psychic Don Staggs your question now at 619-639-4606. TGAF TV Radio on liveparanormal.com with History FM.
Hey everybody, welcome back. We're here with Barry Doyle, the Tech God. We have Phil Summers, the Ghost Box Kid, and myself. I'm the Marshal. We're from TGAF.TV. We're interviewing Don Staggs tonight, Psychic Don. Phil, you want to go ahead with your question?
Actually, Don, I've actually been a little bit more skeptical on the side of Scott or psychics, as far as you know, being involved with them and everything. I've never really actually been on an investigation with a self-proclaimed psychic. You know, how are you guys able to actually see, like? This is a hard question to ask. Like, how are you guys, you know, whenever you're, do you visually see it in your head, or do you know what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, I know what you're trying to ask. What it is, it's different for all different people. That psychic is a really broad term. It's like saying doctor. You know, one doctor is a podiatrist and the other one's a proctologist, you know. So what I do mainly is why I use empath is I pick up on the feelings. Which means I go into an area where someone has hung, and I've done this before. I went into a garage, and I didn't know that a man had hung there. So I didn't know where he'd hung from. So I walked over to the exact spot, exactly where he hung, the body hung at. My throat closed up. I couldn't breathe. It took probably a good couple of hours after that before my throat felt better. So I pick up a lot of times on the feelings. A lot of times when I do see something, I picture it in my head, like the kids by the road, it's kind of like they describe like a third eye or an image in your head.
Right.
I see it in my head like an image, and those kids I can still see in my head. So things like that are where you see. And then also it's gotten to the point lately where sometimes I pick up on people and what they're doing or something that's happening, even when we're online like this. And I don't have an on-off switch, so I don't know, what explains it. But sometimes I'll just speak out and say, hey, what is it about your feet or your shoes or what is it about your dog, you know? So sometimes it just comes to you, and like I say, I don't understand why.
Something like that, you know, is hard to understand, you know, even for the person, you know, self-proclaiming to be a psychic, you know, it's kind of something like that would even be hard to explain, you know. But, I mean, they did a study actually on ESP, I forget what actual organization did the study on it, but they said that one out of every 10 persons that they studied, and they studied like 30,000 individuals. They said one out of 10 people had the ability to actually see what was coming. You know, they sat down and had like a, say for example, they would show two images or whatever, they would show one image, and then on the other side they would show another, and then you would have to guess which side the, say for example, there would be an image of a basketball or an image of an apple, and they would pretty much have to figure out which side had the apple and which side had the basketball. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know about doing studies like that. In fact, I've done it in the past where I've asked online. I'll go, okay, I'm getting, I'd have like three people online. I'll go, look, I'm getting this vine growing on a telephone pole, and I'm getting an old truck like in the 50s, late 50s, a truck, and there's kids playing around it, and one of the kids got hurt. And sure enough, one of the people goes, yeah, that's me. I live down in Georgia. It's Kudzu on the telephone pole. My son was playing on our neighbor's truck and fell off and broke his arm. So sometimes things like that come to you, and then, when you want them to, like the lotto numbers, you never get them.
Right. Yeah, that's one thing that I've always made fun of about psychics, not really making fun of them, but, kind of joking around, if they're really psychic, they could tell the lottery numbers,
Well, the odd thing about that is I've done it before for someone else, but if I do it for my own personal gain, it doesn't happen.
Right.
I stopped at a liquor store one time with my brother-in-law and my niece, and my niece asked me
to call the lottery numbers, we're having feedback.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, is someone on?
Hello?
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 We
have a caller?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
Hello? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Hi, Don and T-Bone.
Hi, Yvonne.
Hi. I couldn't log into the chat, so I had to call in.
So, what's your question for Psychic Dawn?
Just because I have gone on events with Dawn and I have witnessed what he's done, what's your most memorable experience so far to date, Dawn? And how many hitchhikers have you taken home?
Yvonne, there's so many memorable experiences. As you know, one of the most memorable ones is the little girl at the Granada Theater playing hide and seek with me by turning the flashlight off and on.
That was great.
It's really one that sticks with me, and I love going there. She doesn't want to move on. She's just there. I don't know if it's a visitation. She doesn't seem like she's stuck. It's just one of the ones that really, it really gets to you. When you have a kid that wants to play, and probably the hitchhiker thing, I've got to the point where I try not to bring any home with me. When I get done where I'm at, I say prayers for them and command them not to come with me. But every once in a while, I will get one. When it's a kid, I don't really mind. I have had that happen a few times.
Okay.
Now I've actually had an experience where something has followed me before, but if you don't really think about it, if you don't really think about it and notice them, they'll eventually go away. You know what I mean? My ghost story is, for example, the story that I told for this season, I had an entity that had followed me from across the U.S. If you don't think about it, like main focus on my story was, if you don't think about it, nothing will ever happen. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's pretty much the way to look at it. That if it's something good that follows you home, if nothing will happen. If it's something good that follows you home and it's not getting any attention from you, then it probably will just wane off and go, that's what it wanted was attention. If it's something bad that follows you home, it's not going to care if you don't care about it or not. It's gonna hang around. So you got to be careful about, and it's hard to tell the difference sometimes.
Hey, Phil? Phil?
Yes, sir.
Just to clarify, did you talk to Don about, you said that you were followed by an entity from the Sugar Shack at the old jail investigation we did?
Oh, no. Yeah, this is an entity that I was followed by about...
Phil, I'm talking about the Sugar Shack from the jail, Phil.
Sugar Shack?
Or do you not want to talk about that on the air?
I think they're joking, people. That's what I'm looking for, but
hey, Don,
yeah,
I've got a serious question for you here.
Okay.
You mentioned the Granada Theater with the flashlight going off and on and the little girl. I remember that specific investigation. I was there for one of them that you were there. We were there together. And one thing I remember is that backstage, there was a lot of activity going on in that backstage. Can you just talk about what was happening that night? And you remember the hallways upstairs where we got the quote-unquote special access to? What we were feeling in that hallway and just the general, you know, how do you, when you walk into a place, I mean, does this stuff just overwhelm you? Like you say, you have no on-off switch. So how do you control this? What kind of advice do you give to people that are dealing with this and don't understand what's going on? You know, when you walk into a place like the Granada and all this stuff just kind of hits you, what do you do in a case like that?
Well, like with the Granada, you've got two choices. You can ignore it so that it doesn't know that you can feel it or acknowledge it, or you can, you know, I like to try to go ahead and communicate, and if there's some way to help them. If it's someone that's stuck here or is lost or confused and you can help them move on, then I usually do that. I don't sometimes verbally come out and say it around a group. It's just like if I say a protection prayer, I don't at the beginning of the group out loud say a protection prayer, but I am saying it to myself to protect everybody. And the same thing, when I run into a place like that, the first time at Granada, when I walked in there with Dave, the manager of it, as soon as I walked in, I just looked up at the balcony and I knew the little girl was there. I didn't know so much that she had fell off and died, I just knew that there was a little girl there. So... in places like that, you pick up a lot of strange feelings, and sometimes it gets confusing when there's too many. Like with Granada, there's a few in there. Places like Wolf Manor up at Clovis by Fresno, that's my all-time haunted house with the most spirits in it and things that I've ever had happen in my life. And probably second to that would be Queen Mary. And Granada, for being a theater, has quite a few things that happen. And as you well know, you were there, and up in the projection room, in the hallways, things like that.
Well, you remember what happened up in that projection room with my equipment? Remember the night vision unit we set up there?
Yeah, didn't your equipment
shut
off?
That thing went all haywire. That was crazy. Oh. Cables were unplugged. It was pretty nuts.
That is one of the areas up there at that projection room where I don't know if it was then or another time that I seen a shadow man at the stairs going up into the projection area. And I don't see a lot with my eyes. This is probably only the third or fourth around there shadow person that I've ever seen. It's easy to remember when you see them. I mean, you know, I seen one at a cemetery back in Decatur, Illinois, that stepped out right in front of me. I seen one at the stairs there. I have seen one on the Queen Mary. So when you see a shadow person, it's something that really sticks with you and you remember it.
Right. Now, I remember that night at the Granada with the flashlight. Can you explain that, the process with that flashlight and how we did that? And why it's possible, because I caught a lot of flack for that video that I brought back, that while it was just to the point of shorting out and this and that, and happened to be a coincidence that it would turn on at that time.
Yeah, well, that is an explanation, and that is possible. The thing about that is I had people saying I had a remote control. It was my flashlight. My hand was in my pocket. Actually, the flashlight, I think, was Dave's from the theater. I believe it was Robin's daughter that was using it. When I walked by, it wasn't unscrewed or anything. It was just sitting on the chair. I walked by, and I go, I wish you'd do something to show us, you know, that you're here, and the light came on. At that time, we did unscrew it to the flash point, and we laid it on the chair. But I then had Robin, I think, was sitting next to it, or her daughter, and I had her slap the chair, hit the chair, bump the chair. I wanted to make sure that it wasn't a static thing where it would come on with vibration. And we did check it that way when we did it to make sure. And every time I try to do that with a flashlight, I do take it to the static point, because some things aren't strong enough to move a desk or to flip a switch completely. So if you put it at that partway point and then just turn it to where it's on, and it's not going to go off by accident, and then ask for it. But if you can do that static point on it, and you can hit the floor or the table, and it flashes off and on, it's no good. And the thing about the coincidence is, I call things a coincidence when they happen one or two or three or four times. You know, it's a coincidence. But I've learned over the years, if you spread it out, if you shorten it up, if you change the variance on times, because, you know, there's certain second rules when signals are broadcast and things happen. I've done that before with Knox up at Wolf Manor. Years ago, I spent the night there, and there was a part built onto it, a chapel that they tore off. I was getting knocks on the ceiling, and everybody had their recorders on. I've got it on recording. Everybody's running around. I went in and I asked. I go, it's a little boy. I picked up a little boy, I felt. And I go, if you're on the roof, can you knock three times? He goes, tap, tap, tap. I go, well, that's pretty good, but that doesn't convince me. Tap once. He goes, tap. I go, well, I don't know. And I'm showing everybody with my hands, you know, that I'm spreading the question out to make it longer. So I go, I don't know. You could be a rat. You could be somebody that's up on the roof. I'm not real sure, you know. And I drew it out, and I go, knock four times. And he went, tap, 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 tap. Now, after I did this for about 10 minutes, with variance of times, no taps except when I answered and always correct, I go, that's it. I ran out the front door, around the house, climbed the stairs on the side of the house through, there was an active beehive that was there then, and went up onto this flat roof to see if there was an animal or somebody messing with me. There wasn't nobody there.
Well, if you remember correctly, too, when we were at the Granada Theater in California, you know, the coincidence debunking, that's all well and good. But when you go on, and I've got, I want to say it's like 25, 30 minutes of unstopped video, it's continuous video of this flashlight going off and on, and it's, you know, make it flash three times. It flashed three. Okay, now make it flash one time. Once.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now make it turn on and get really, really dim. Okay, brighten it up. Now,
yeah.
When this happens for 25, 30 minutes solid, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Do you really possibly think that it could be coincidence, or is this really
something
that possibly could be going on?
Yeah, you know, Jeff, the same thing was on the stage with radar. We took a K2 meter up there, and I did find an electric source. And I tilted the K2 meter there, and I would ask it, go over to 3 for me, go down to 1, go up to 3. And after that, I had someone ask me on the Queen Mary, a cynic, not a skeptic. He told me, he goes, if you had 2 K2 meters there, I'd believe it. I go, well, I have the footage here. I actually went back and used 2 meters. I put 2 meters down. I go, well, the one on my left, and I pointed at it, well, you go up 3, but the one not move. I go, now the one on the right go up, but the left not move. I go, now both of them go up. And it answered correctly each time.
Yeah.
So it's hard to have coincidence on two, like I said with the infrascans, it's hard to have coincidence on two identical meters sitting in the same area at the same angle and asking each one to give a different answer. And that's where, you know, I kind of like, I like to use the scientific evidence to prove that, yes, there is something out there, and it can affect different things in different ways.
Right. Okay, well, we've got about 10 minutes before our first half is up. We've got a new segment out here now that we're going to start. We wanted to do this in the first half hour, but we're really having some technical issues with the switchboard here tonight. So we're going to do it right now, the last 10 minutes of the first half here. It's called Tech 10. And what this is the tech guy, Barry Doyle, is going to be going over some technology information. We're going to be gathering questions from everybody of the different technologies and just information you want to be answered. So, Tech Guide, what's on your mind? What's hot and what's not?
Well, Jeff, what's hot and what's not? This week, I've actually the most exciting thing to me this week is my interest in studying our use of recorders that catch infrasound levels in EVP sessions and paranormal investigation. So.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's amazing. You got a sound effect for me?
You know, I'm looking for it, and it's not here. The switchboard is really messed up, buddy.
I got one for you guys. That's my drill. Did that work?
Well, I didn't know if that was like a lemur.
There we go.
How's that, Barry?
There you go. That was cool as hell right there.
Well, this kind of stems out of the drill anyway. That stems out of our mad scientist lighting that we've all been making. We got red LEDs on Phil's camera. We've got IR LEDs on Jeff's camera. We've got ultraviolet and infrared lights on my camera. And guys, let us tell you, we've accomplished absolutely nothing with all that technology. Can we do an applause, Jeff?
What's that?
Thank you. Now, for more... All right, I'm loving that. On a more serious note, guys, actually, in truth, we don't know exactly what we've accomplished. We're actually still reviewing evidence from the last investigation. We all experimented with the multiple light sources. What I will say is that my recent excitement has been over this ability to use a recorder that records below the human range of hearing. And what most people don't understand, or the average consumer, is that digital recorders, people say, well, you record and a voice will show up that you didn't hear with your human ears, and it shows up on the recorder, and that was an EVP. And what a lot of people think is that the EVP was somehow... it actually came out and it wasn't within the human range of hearing, and the digital recorder did some magic, and now we have it. Well, fact of the matter is most EVPs that we catch with our recorders that we bought from either Walmart or from Zoom Corporation for the more expensive ones, no matter what the range is, those are all set up to record within the human range of hearing, which it starts at 20 hertz. And the fact of the matter is that anything you record on those recorders plays back in the human range of hearing. So, before I bore everybody too much, what I'm talking about is recorders that record below 20 hertz. Thank you. Recorders that record below 20 hertz is kind of a new thing that's available to paranormal investigators, and there is one device that's out there. And that device is called the RT-EVP, and that comes from DOS distribution. Same folks are bringing the Melmeter, and I believe that's at promeasure.com. Is that correct, Phil, Jeff, somebody?
That's correct.
I believe it is. You're right, yes.
You're right.
So the cool thing is that this particular device, I know I'm thinking a lot of our listeners have heard about it, or they might have seen it on television. This is actually a really amazing device. And
what does it record at, Barry? What's the range of it?
Well, your typical recorder is going to start at about 20 hertz, which is well within the scope of human hearing. and it should go up to, I think it's 2,000 kilohertz. And the idea being that this one actually will go, it is rated with the microphone to go to 15 hertz. And that may not sound like a big difference between, 15.
Only 5 hertz, is that a big deal, that 5 hertz difference?
Yeah, 20, 15. It is, it's rated to go at 5 hertz below, but there have been EVPs have been caught all the way down to 10 hertz. At least the analysis by the Kling brothers on some of our last episodes of Ghost Lab there, they actually captured, using this device, 10 hertz. And it may not sound like a big stretch, but in fact it is. Just like with the, most people don't realize that the infrared range of light is huge. It's absolutely huge. And so we only, with even our Sony night vision camcorders, we're only touching the surface of infrared. We're just starting to get into the infrared spectrum. Same thing with the audio. We are getting a lot further below what we can hear with our ears. And that is exciting. Because think of all those things that you can catch that you ordinarily wouldn't have been able to get to. So, that's it. That's my
Don, what are your thoughts on this with the lower range of the megahertz with the
kilohertz,
the device,
the
being able to
below
the range of human hearing?
Things probably try to communicate in different ranges, and of course, if they're in that lower range, we're not going to pick it up. I like to, even though I don't have any of the low-range recorders, I like to run two. Sometimes the other night I went down to Star of India, I ran 5 recorders. Just so different recorders seem to pick up different white noise and different things and stuff like that.
Right.
But I had a question about a tech question. I've wondered about this for about 2 years, and I've asked people that were supposed to work on it. You know how you get false orbs and stuff with night vision cameras? I've always wondered why they don't incorporate the 3D technology where you use two lenses with two infrared light sources, and then if you pick up an orb, it would actually have dimension to it because you would be getting – it wouldn't be an accidental reflection that shows on one camera. It would actually show substance because the other lens would pick up another angle. I've always wondered about why no one has made the 3D night vision, just so it eliminates all those theories about, you know, a lot of orbs are dust and pollen and everything else. I'd like to see a camera that would prove that that's a real orb. It has substance like a baseball.
One thing I'll say, Don, is that's really great thinking on your part. I think that the reason that particular type of technology hasn't been incorporated yet for that type of application is because I think the 3D camcorders themselves are just starting to hit the consumer market. And I'm pretty sure Sony already has a 3D camcorder either released or it's about to be available to consumers. Haven't looked into it to find out if it incorporates night shot, but that would be neat. What we're doing currently
cheap one that you can get for like $100, but it's not a night vision. So you could buy a cheap one for $100 and somehow try to incorporate the lenses or whatever, and then run the night vision IRs and just to see what you get. I think that you could probably put one together for probably $150 that way. If you're someone like me who's got IR illuminators and equipment out his rear end anyway, so.
Well, what we have done with TGAF, one thing we've experimented with is using not a full-spectrum camera, but a dual-spectrum camera. So for those who – what I mean specifically, it sees UV light, it sees infrared light, but it filters out all visible light that's visible to the human eye. The cool thing about this is that it was presented theoretically that false positives – such as orbs and such like that would be minimized and maybe even eliminated altogether. So we actually tried an experiment. We set up a static camera with infrared light, and we took an old chair, and we banged it and banged it and got a whole bunch of dust. Well, of course, on the screen from the regular infrared, it looked like a whole swirl, you know, whirlwind of orbs. Meanwhile,
yeah.
the dual spectrum camera, nada, nothing, not one. So we're looking at literally hundreds and hundreds of would-be orbs on the one camera, and on the dual spectrum, nothing. So one of the things that's neat about that is those of you who are out there listening too, full spectrum probably would do a similar thing. The dual spectrum, which is basically shutting out the visible light source, since it is only recording in those frequencies and allowing no visible light, that also helps to validate whether something is an actual paranormal anomaly or dust.
Yeah, that's
so,
a good idea.
Don, I like what you're thinking.
That would rule out the reflection, and that's what so many orbs that you get are reflections. And I usually have to rule out when I get orbs. I got to say in the high 90 percentile for what, you know, for dust and pollen and moisture and everything else. When I do get an orb that actually doesn't follow an airflow path, like I had one that crossed the room, stopped in the middle, came up to the camera, looked at the camera, went back to the middle room, and went back out the same door. Now, that one there, I didn't understand at all. It didn't follow any of the scientific evidence of airflow and reflection because it kept the light all the time. So, you know, it's just I always like to have some kind of camera that will prove or disprove something.
Yeah, well, that...
All right, guys.
Yeah,
we gotta take our one-hour break here. We'll be right back with Don Stagg, Psychic Don. You're on liveparanormal.com on History FM. This is TGAF.TV Radio. We'll be right back.
Live Paranormal Radio is the place to be, so join us at liveparanormal.com.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Do you have a question for Psychic Don? If so, call the studio line at 619-63-
Question for Psychic Don? If so, call the studio line at 619-639-4606 or log into the chat at liveparanormal.com. Ask Psychic Don Stagg your question now at 619-639-4606. TGAF TV Radio on liveparanormal.com with History FM.
Welcome to the Great American Phenomena Hunt on liveparanormal.com with History FM, TGAF.TV Radio with your host, the Marshal Jeff Gruno, and featuring Tech God Barry Doyle, the Ghost Fox Kid, Phil Summers, Mike Trainwreck, and you. Are you ready to join the hunt? Here's your host, Marshal.
How you doing, everybody? We're back here with Don Stags, Psychic Don. We've got a line still open. If anybody's in the chat room there or listening live on paranormal.com or History FM, please call in 619-639-4606. We have a phone line open right now. I want all five filled up, people. Come on, call in. So, Don, in your experiences, in all the years that you've been doing this, what would you say is the best advice for somebody that is either A, interested in phenomena or paranormal, or if they think that they might have some sensitive type abilities, what would be your advice to them as to how to learn this? I mean, you know, you see all these groups out there, you see all these TV shows, and I say it time and time again that, you know, they have a production crew behind them. You know, it's ratings, ratings, ratings. So what would be your advice to them is how how would you say, you know, pursue it? What would be the thing to look for?
Well, if it's someone who thinks that they have some abilities and, you know, and they might be psychic in some way, what they should really be careful about is don't ask for something that you don't really want. Meaning that don't go into a graveyard and take something on. You know, you might run into something that you can't handle. The thing to do is to find other people that are more knowledgeable in it, that have done it for a while, talk to them, find out about protection, no matter what your beliefs are. But you have to have some kind of protection that you personally believe in. And as far as the shows and stuff go, I know, you know, with the production crews and everything, you know, it's all about, you know, keeping the people excited and all that. There are a few people that I know in the industry that I respect, and they bring forward what personally I think is a very honest view on their part. There are some that I suspect don't, but you know, it is a job once they're on TV, and you do have bosses, and I understand that. For the most part, I think that most people go into it with the right outlook, and just a few are changed to that point where they make it a production for entertainment.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, you know, there's a lot of things going on right now, you know, running around the internet and all this, and this one's fighting with that one, and this one's fighting with that one, and this one's calling this one a fake and all this, and, you know, and it's just kind of getting crazy out there. What would you feel, or how do you feel on an oath of integrity that everybody that is involved in this in any way, shape, or form be bound by an oath of integrity, and not even an oath of an honesty so much, but integrity? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that would be great if the world worked that way. But for one thing, an oath of integrity is, like you say, I can tell you that I'm not a liar. But if I'm a liar, how do you know I'm not lying right then? So,
touche.
Yeah, that doesn't work. What you got to do is have a little bit more openness for people to question things. That's why I never have a problem with a skeptic. Skeptics, I love. I had a skeptic on my team. He is in the engineering phase, and he would just tear things apart. I love a skeptic, as opposed to a cynic, where a cynic can have Elvis Presley go up and dance for him in his face and lap dance, and he's still going to say it didn't happen, you know. But a skeptic is always good to have, and I think that what they need to do is they need to be more open for people to question them on stuff without getting upset. I never mind. I have, like I said, I've had people go, oh, you've got a remote control in your pocket or whatever. You know, it's good for them to question that, because a lot of times, you know, I've seen the Chris Angel stuff, you know, and there's tricks out there. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I like to take my recorders with a clipboard right along with an amplified speaker on it. And when I record something, I want to play it back right then for the people with me. I don't want to take it home where somebody can say, I added an EVP to it. I want to play it
right
back real time, right then. And if I get something, that's great. If I don't, that's okay. At least I did it honest.
And that's one thing for all of you that don't know Don Staggs and have not ever gone an investigation with him. That is very true what he's saying. This guy literally carries a clipboard with his recorders Velcroed to it and this little speaker contraption right in the middle, and it's right there. And he will stop right dead in his tracks, turn the flashlight on, or hand it to somebody and say, here, light this up for me, will you? And he'll play that back, and we'll sit there and review it right there on the spot, right immediately,
yeah,
right there. So I agree with you, and I understand your philosophy behind that. That's a pretty good idea in doing that.
you know, it's the best thing to do. I know on the TV shows, and I've got friends that are on the TV shows and people that I respect on there, but, you know, I have questioned them before and said, hey, you know what? I seen you change your shirt. I know you filmed this for 2 days. And he told me, yeah, of course we did. You know, it was a big investigation. It took a lot. Then we have to edit it and put everything together. You know, you don't go in there in 30 minutes and get this stuff. People think that, you know, some of these shows go on there in 30 minutes. And they, trust me, I've done a lot of investigations, and I have sat in tunnels, in caves, in attics, in crawl spaces all night long and got absolutely nothing. I didn't put something on it so it would look good for the people who owned the place. I just told them, if you have something, nothing happened while I was here.
And that, I guess that's one thing, too, that's a fallacy in the world of the fans or the viewers, if you will, that when you go out on an investigation, you're going to find something. I'd say in my experience, I'd estimate the high 80%, if not a little bit higher, you don't find anything, nothing, zero, zip, zilch. And it's when you do find something, that's when you get all excited, because it is so rare. You're not going to walk into a place and get some sort of evidence.
Jeff, my dog's dish is haunted, I think.
What's that?
Sound effect, my dog's dish is haunted.
Why does it keep going empty?
Your what is haunted?
I was really hoping for some sound effects.
Holy crap.
I was really hoping for some sound effects. You know, Don, do you notice? Don, do you notice that investigators who are... Do you notice that the investigators are getting started? That's something that, you know, they have enthusiasm, and that is just fantastic. But I think that with the television shows, I mean, do you think the television shows also make an impression on new would-be investigators and to affect that they go out and get into the field and then get disappointed or overly excited and end up wanting to believe so bad that they find bad evidence and assume it's real?
That is exactly the case. And I don't have my group together anymore. I disbanded it last year, and I'm just independent now, helping teams out and going with friends and stuff like that. But for the years that I had it, you wouldn't believe the number of tests that I had for people to go along, or they wanted to learn, or they were interested, or they seen a TV show. And there was a few times that we had people that we tried out, and some of them, you know, they don't understand. They think they're going to go out there, and like I say, Elvis is going to jump up and sing Blue Suede Shoes and dance for them. And it doesn't work that way. You sit there all night, and you record all night, review evidence for 2 days, and all you get out of it is there anybody here? And you get out. So you worked all that time for get out. I used to take new members. I came to the Queen Mary, and I take them back to the freezer, and no, shouldn't tell that. Not supposed to be in there. But I take them back to the freezer. If they freeze the run thing, then I knew they couldn't be on the team, because you can't have that when you go to someone's home.
Can you say that again, Don? What happened with these folks? You said they would run?
Well, for new members, I'd take them to the Queen Mary and to a place where knew we were going to feel something, or I knew they were going to get scared, because I'm on the Queen Mary, and if they run and scream, you know, down the hallway, then I know that they can't handle it, and I know not to take them to someone's home. So that was kind of like a test I used to have. I would take prospective new members on the Queen Mary and take them to a certain area and then play back and let them hear EVPs or feel something touch the back of their neck or something like that. And if they were scared and ran away and they did the well-known run, dude, run thing, then I wouldn't put them on the team.
Don, do you think that's very fair? I mean, you dressed up as Michael Myers too, didn't you?
Yeah, I was Michael Myers, so that might have scared them. You know, That's one thing I really should touch on. I made that a real solid point. I know some shows like to goop around and scare each other. I made it a real solid point from day one. Anybody I work with an investigation, anybody for anything on an investigation, no joking around where they jump out and scare somebody.
Well, you could wind up giving somebody a cardiac, literally.
Well, it's not just that, but if you jumped out and scared somebody and you get knocked on your butt, don't cry about it later.
This
because
is true.
Your first impulse, if somebody comes up and grabs you, you turn around and slug them. And, you don't need to do that. You know, somebody could have a heart attack. Somebody could fall and get hurt. It's not very professional if you're in someone's home and they see you joking around like that. I mean, if I call somebody in to check my home and I've got a serious thing where I'm scared, you know, for my children and my wife, and all of a sudden I see them taking masks and scaring each other in the hallway, you know, how professional are they? So I've always tried to keep it professional and tried to respect the clients.
I think that's one thing, too,
I want to throw a little disclaimer in here, too. You know, when we're on investigations, you know, I want to reiterate what Don just said. You've got to conduct yourself in a professional manner. The things we're doing on the show here, all these sound effects and all that, we're having fun because we're all friends.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is nothing like an investigation. When you go out there, like Don is saying, you've got to be alert. You've got to pay attention to detail, and you've got to be very, very professional. You know, you've got to have your A game on right then and there, because like you're saying, Don, I agree. If you get a team into your home, a family invites you into their home, they're scared. They don't know what's going on. Yes, as paranormal investigators, we deal with this all the time. I would hope that the majority of people out there don't react like you're describing. But that's something that's a very, very big issue, you know, because that you can really affect somebody's life if you go into their home like that and, like you're saying, you're scaring each other in the hallway, taking a nap on the couch, you know, eating a sandwich, whatever. I can just picture this in my head. I'd go nuts.
It's also a safety issue, Jeff. One of my team members, when we went out one time, we were out in an open area. And it was pitch dark, and we're supposed to stay together in pairs. And for some reason, he had gotten off from me, wasn't in the pair. And all of a sudden, I had this bad feeling about something, and I told him to stop, don't take another step. And then I took the flashlight and went over to him, and 3 foot in front of him was a 200-foot drop off to the ocean. So that's one of the things where you stay in pairs. Don't wander off by yourself. If he had slipped and been hanging onto the crater, how would we have known where he was at? We wouldn't know what happened or anything. So I even though I have to admit I have broken the rule a couple of times and walked off by myself, I find it best to stay at least in a pair.
That's right. Yeah, that's one thing definitely. You've got to pay attention. The safety issue is unbelievable. Some of these places that you'll go into are death traps in themselves, or an accident waiting to happen. And it's so dark, you know, it's kind of the nature of the beast. We work in the dark, infrared and all that good stuff, and FLIRs and night vision and blah, blah, blah. So you've really, really got to pay attention, and everybody's got to kind of watch out for themselves. I definitely, definitely agree.
Now, another thing that I've found investigating client houses, one thing I've found is when we were doing this one case, we were, we were looking around. We were seeing all these books and like Anne Rice books, and we were seeing all these movies like Paranormal Activity and stuff like that.
Yes.
We were noticing that this client had all these movies and books that suggested to us that they were basically wanting to, you know, like they legitimately had a paranormal type, you know, activity going on. But they had brought it in themselves. They had basically wanted to exploit the paranormal. And that's one thing you've got to watch out for these clients whenever you're investigating their houses as well. People that are exploiting the paranormal for, you know, bringing in groups wanting to say that their house is haunted.
Yes, I've had that happen.
I've had that happen at a place, and it's actually one of the places where I went to. I tried to get some evidence at the end. I do my best to cleanse the house for them as good as I can, not saying that it works. I hope that it does. And I tried. When it was done, I told them. I go, you know, your son can't ask for this to come back anymore. It took about a year, and I got another contact from the guy. And he goes, well, we got the activity again. I go, why? He goes, my son missed the ghost for Halloween. He asked it to come back. That's when I told him that he'd have to contact his church. He contacted the Catholic Church, and they did an exorcism on the house along with family counseling.
Wow. Don, we have a question here for you. You say you haven't found the on and off switch for your abilities. So we assume that that means you get things happening anytime, any place, pretty much. What would you say is the strangest place and the most awkward time where you started picking up on something?
Oh, wow. That's tough. I know one of the worst places that I hate to go to is a nursing home or a hospital. I don't want to be in there and have the switch turn on. It can be really bad. Cemeteries, on the other hand, people have this misconception, I believe, that all cemeteries are haunted and there's ghosts floating around. I could probably go in a cemetery, lay down, and take a nap. I don't know why anybody would want to stick around just where that earthly body is at. They usually go to a place that they loved or they worked or where they died at, you know. Some of the odd places to pick things up is driving down the road, intersections, stores. Walk down an aisle in a store and you know where somebody died at in the store. Plus some of the things you pick up about people. Sometimes you have to consider, should I say something or should I not? And sometimes it's a real hard decision.
Right.
Don, I actually have a question about that as well. This was a peculiar thing that happened with me. Honest to God, I'm at Home Depot of all places. And I was shopping for something completely unrelated to anything but maybe for my house or something. It wasn't like, you know, we go out to these stores to try and find stuff to make gizmos and such. And last thing on my mind was anything to do with the paranormal. And I'm walking along in the aisle, and I literally, I mean, more than anything, feel like a human being is against the back of me, breathing down at my neck. And I turn around because I'm thinking it's a customer. It's maybe getting too close, like it's maybe packed, you know, maybe it's the aisle is packed up or something. Nobody's there, and I'm getting the chills the whole time. I mean, is it really that common? You said an aisle of a store. I don't think anybody died in that aisle. I don't know. But, you know, how common is that?
It's very common. If you speak to a number of people that are I use that broad term again, psychic. If you speak to a number of them, you'll find out that this is a common everyday thing for them. It happens to everyone. People put it different ways. You know, like some will say, well, I knew what you were going to say, or I was just getting ready to call you. But, you know, people pick up on things. People feel things. Since I've, like, come out about, you know, being the abilities I have and stuff over the last few years, the last 8 or 9 years. I talk to people when I meet them. I tell them, I talk to them, and sometimes they start to tell me a story about what happened to them, and I already know when they start the story what happened to them. It's and sometimes I'll stop them in the middle and finish the story for them, and they'll go, how do you know that? I go, because it happens to so many people, but people are afraid to step forward and say, I had this experience, or my dad passed away, and the night that he passed away, you know, he came to me, and he told me everything was okay. Things like that. It happens so much that, you know, there is a logical part where people were, you know, a skeptic can truly say, well, some of those things are because of
your subconscious creating it. Like you say, you weren't in there looking for anything like that. You didn't have that on your mind. And that's the way it is a lot of times with me. I don't have to be looking for it. I'll be going down the road, and my wife will, why didn't you get on the freeway? And I'll go, well, I don't want to get on because there's a truck turned over at the bottom of the ramp. And she'll go, how do you know? And then we drive over the overpass. She looks down. There's a truck turned over at the bottom of the ramp. I don't know that I'm going to say it. I don't know that I knew about it. It just happened.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, looking at that particular situation for myself, I guess maybe that would be my closest taste to what you might, the way you experience it. And I'm not one that, you know, likes, as a paranormal investigator, I don't, every time I bring something like that up out to the public, I feel like I'm definitely throwing my credibility up on the table. As
well,
you know,
no, you should, and no, I you should not don't feel that way. Your feelings have a lot to do with things, and if people can't distinguish between your feelings. Now, there are some out there that are psychics, and they're full-blown, all to the wall. I'm right, nobody else is, and the psychic is to go. You really have to blend. You have to consider, yeah, I'd like to have some scientific evidence to back this up. Or I'd like to walk up and ask the cashier, did an old man die over in that corner? You know, and one place I ran into was a biker bar. I went to it to check it out for something, and I went with the owner. Me and her went out and walked out back, and as we're walking out back, I bent over and my stomach hurt. She goes, what's wrong? I go, a guy got stabbed by this tree and he bled out. He died right here. She goes, oh my God, how do you know that? She goes, I just found out about it. And I go, well, it's evident. It's right here. And so, you know, things like that happen. And sometimes, like I say, without having an on-off switch, they just hit you. And that's what happened to you in the aisle. It just hit you.
You got me inspired. I kid you not, Jeff, Phil. I am inspired enough to. It's the weekend. I might even take a ride over there tomorrow and just ask. The reason I say that is being on investigations, we get those feelings when we're encountering something. And I'm sorry, that was a relatively strong, overwhelmingly strong feeling that I had that day that I still remember it from several months ago. I want to know now. So I might just go ask and say, hey, you know, is there something that happened in the store over, you know, I don't know, even plumbing, I think.
Yeah, you
but
know,
I do know the
there you go,
Barry. Happened.
There you go. There's a case for TGF.
No,
TGF,
yeah.
It might be the guy worked there, and he just likes that area, and you were in his area.
Yeah, I certainly am going to ask. Don, I also, while I got your attention before the marshal jumps in, and, you know, tries to arrest my talking, no pun intended. The cemetery thing. Now, I know I also agree with you and believe that there are, you know, the majority, you know, average cemetery is, you know, no reason for it to particularly be haunted. However, when there is a haunting going on, my big question is, why do you think that there's a haunting going on in a cemetery? Would it be the spirit is confused? Would it be that they do watch over their mortal remains and feel upset about how they've been treated? I mean, What's your sense of that?
Okay, like I said earlier, I was talking about a shadow person. One time I seen a shadow person, it was in a cemetery. It was a cemetery back in Illinois. Back there, I contacted online a group, a paranormal group in the area, and when I contacted them, they go, oh, we can sneak in. I go, no one has to sneak in. I go, I'll get permission. So I got permission, we went in the cemetery. And I told him, I go, you usually don't get anything in cemeteries. I go, but there's something following us. And I noticed there was another psychic along because I seen him looking over his shoulder. I told him, I go, you're psychic, aren't you? He goes, yeah, I'm sensitive. I go, so what are you getting? And he described the same thing that I was feeling. So we walked around and walked around. I went to this one area, and I took a picture of this tree. And I don't know why I took a picture of the tree, but when I took a picture of the tree, I put my camera down. And as I put the camera down, this shadow stepped out. He was about 5'10", had a hat on, like an old-time, like a Frank Sinatra type, like a hat, stepped out in front of me and blocked the light. I looked up at him. He stepped behind a tombstone and faded down and disappeared. I walked up into the area, and I felt that he died there, that he'd been shot. So that I picked that up there and told them about it, yelled out to make sure where everybody was at. We went to another area, and there was a family that was buried. And they all had the same last name. And they the other people in the group wanted to know why I was picking up a dandelion. I picked the flower and I laid it on the grave, and then I went over and go, "Can I sit here?" And I sat on the headstone. And they go, "Well, why'd you do that?" I go, "I thought I should ask permission because there's somebody watching these graves." And they go, "Well, let me sit there." I think there was five people there. Three of them that sat down got shoved off the headstone. I didn't. The person that was there, I told them, I said, "It's a woman, and her name," I said her name, I can't remember what it was now. We walked about 10 feet away, there she was. She must have been someone who came there and looked after those grave sites during her life, because she was still in that area watching over those grave sites and taking care of them. And then the shadow guy, I checked a year later with Troy Taylor back there, who was the local expert. He went with me out to the cemetery. I told him the exact area where I seen the guy. He goes, "This is where one of the custodians here in the 30s got shot and killed." And I described the guy, and he goes, "Yeah, that sounds like that would be that era." So there are instances in cemeteries where you get things, but it's usually not, in my experience, where someone has died somewhere else, unless, like I say, it's someone that came there and took care of it and loved a certain area, or one area in there was some death from the Civil War where they had actually stacked the bodies up that were dead to bury, and some of them weren't quite dead yet. So that was an area, too, that had some activity.
Psychic Don,
we do have a caller here. I'd like to get to the caller here real quick.
Okay.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. What's your name?
Are you talking to me?
Hello? Do you have a question for Don Staggs?
Yeah, are you there?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, hey, how's it going tonight?
We're doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to ask you guys, basically, what are your feelings about the modality of using psychics in investigations to confirm evidence, or do you think it's just good to have them on investigations to point you in the right direction on where to investigate?
Well, I'll give you my answer. If you're taking a psychic along to confirm something, you might as well get a comic book, because a psychic can only give you his opinion, and it's more that you have to confirm the psychic's opinion than it is to use his opinion as a confirmation. Meaning, I can tell you all day, yeah, you guys are right. You got EVPs there, and there's definitely a ghost there. That's no good. That's just me trailing along and picking at the information. You should use a psychic to help you locate the areas of interest, meaning where that spirit or that entity might be at, where they might get the best communication, where they might get the best video, things like that. If you don't, you end up with a sideshow.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this caller that's calling in, I have been duped. This is the one and only Mike Wreck Trainwreck. Calling
Hello.
All the way from Seattle, Washington. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, no problem. I was just calling because I was on my way home from work, and I figured I better call you guys and let you know I'm finally out of there.
Hey, Mike, I'm really sorry that Jeff was making those comments about your spelling. Jeff, you need to keep it, you know, kind of keep that stuff between us, all right?
Oh, okay.
No worries, Mr. Doyle.
Hey,
we're going to take a brief break for about 10 seconds. We'll be right back on LifeParanormal.com, History FM with Don Stagg, Psychic Don. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Life Paranormal Radio at LifeParanormal.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. That was virtually painless. We're here on TGAF.TV Radio on LifeParanormal.com and History FM. We're here tonight with Don Stagg, Psychic Don, from the beautiful state of California. And, Don, anything else you want to go over? Anything you want to touch? One of Mike's questions, is there a time where you would not reveal what you feel when you go in someplace where you would hold back or suppress information? And if you do, what would that be? What reasoning?
Unfortunately, if it's going to unnecessarily hurt someone, where there is no chance to correct the situation, I'm not going to say that I'm going to lie to someone, but I probably would not say there was anything at all. In a situation where I'm in a place and there's a problem, I had one place where I went in and we did an investigation, we did a follow-up, I did a pre-investigation, I checked all this stuff, I seen mist rising from the bed, I heard a computer that was shut off, breathing, gasping for air. I went through all this stuff, I went through and tried to check the house, and then in the very end, I knew that the brother hated him, and I didn't want to say anything, you know. And I go, so what did you do with your brother's ashes? And this is honest to God truth, Jeff. The husband and wife told me, we never did like the son of a bitch. He's in a Tupperware out by the trash can. And
wow.
When they told me that, that's when I'm like, oh, my God. And I go, and you guys wonder why something's happening in your home? I go, you know, put him in the garage for now and then do what you promised to do when he was alive. It was one of those things where I thought, well, this guy really hates him. He's the husband's brother. He really hates the wife. He really hates them. And I'm like, you know, I didn't want to tell him that. But I guess there was a reason that he hated them. So sometimes
that's crazy.
Don't tell it. And then in the case where if I know it's a friend of mine that's going to die or something, it's really bad. I don't want to tell somebody something like that. If I meet somebody in an event, I get a hug or something, and I know she's really ill, but I know there's no help, why would I bring that up?
That's a good point. And see, right there, you know, it's you've got some integrity behind you, you know, and that's a great thing. In my opinion, that's hard to find these days in people across the board, period. So for that, you know, I think I can speak for all of us here on the air today. We commend you for that, definitely, more than definitely.
Well, thanks. You know, I try my best to, you know, it might sound corny, but I try to treat everybody the way I'd like to be treated. I try to be as honest as I possibly can, and I really try to help people. One of the things that we never touched on is when you help someone pass over, it's an experience that is so hard to relate to anyone. The best person I've ever heard tell this story is Chris Fleming telling about Janis Joplin and how he stepped through the veil and talked to her. I've done it before where someone's passed on, and I know it sounds corny, but I actually, when they went through the veil, I put my head and shoulders through. I didn't go all the way through. And it was, when he told the story, I had to take him over and talk to him personally. And I go, Chris, it's like this and this and this. People don't know that. He goes, you know. He goes, you've seen it. So,
it's like this. It's like what? Can you give us an example?
It's not the theoretical door with a bright light. There's this veil. There's this glow of light and this veil. And one of the persons I helped, she passed through the veil. And as she passed through, I was interested. And I was mentally there, so I stuck my head and shoulders through it. And I seen how everything was in this, and I know this makes me sound crazy, but I seen how everything was, and it's so hard to explain, but everything was connected to everything else. The colors were vivid and yet blended. Everything felt everything else. She was through there. People were waiting for her. It was just beautiful, and it's so hard to explain. I used to tell people, it's kind of like when you're a little kid and somebody gives you candy, you know, oh, good, I got some candy. You know, you got this feeling inside. And to help someone actually cross over when they're stuck, it's well worth the effort.
Well, that's some pretty deep stuff there, Don. And I know the first time you told me that story, I just sat there in awe. And even now when you're telling it, I kind of get the chills a little bit, because I remember the first time you told me that story, we were in that house in Peoria over at that friend of mine, his aunt's house. Remember that?
Yeah, I also remember the man from the East Coast that had the New York or Bronx accent, kind of a burly speaking guy, I'll put it that way. There was something there. There was something there. He'd go, yeah. You know, like, yeah. You know?
Yep,
so,
that was Jim's uncle. Yeah, the one that he passed away in that bedroom. And
yeah. He didn't
that,
say
that was,
yes.
That was an exciting night.
Yeah.
We got some great EVPs out of that house.
Hey Jeff, Psychic Dawn, we have a question from the chat room. Sue asked, how long after a person passes away will you still feel their presence in the place where they pass away at? She says, my father passed away in the entrance in the port, in the porch and around his death, even though I no longer live there but have friends that do, we get a strange feeling when we enter the house.
Yeah, that can be there forever. That can be a residual feeling, which is, I pick up on residuals. Residual is just an event happened there, and it's kind of stamped its place in time. If it is residual, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. If it is something about him still being there or coming back to that area or something like that, then all someone has to do is to go to that area and tell him it's okay to move on. If it's their home, they need to take control of the situation and whatever belief they've got and say you have to leave. And for more purposes than anything, I imagine it's residual, which means like it's like a tape recording that's there, so you have that feeling forever. And I pick up feelings like that from as far back as in the Civil War time or the out here. I'll be at a place and I'll pick up an area with horses or a corral, and then when they do the research, they find out that there was Indians and there was camp and stuff in that area. So it's something that might stick around for a while.
Also, Ambrosia asks in the chat room, what is the best place you visited and or case you've done? And why?
I got to say, what I always tell everybody, most haunted house, and I use that term because there's lots of other places, but the most haunted house that I've ever spent an entire night in is Wolf Manor. It's outside of Fresno.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Wolf Manor, there's no time that I've been up there that there hasn't been 12 or 13 spirits in different areas of the house. So far, I've only picked up on one bad entity or bad spirit that's there that used to be out back and somehow it came up to the house. But there's so much there. I've had so many things that happened to me when I'm there. And, in fact, I was up there for one thing with a friend of mine, Barry Fitzgerald, and they had an event, and I went up there. And first time I met Barry, and working with him, I left him and went to another group, and all of a sudden he come running in the room and goes, Don, come in here. You got to see this. The recorder or the box or whatever had English only programmed into it. It was answering in German. Things like that. This house has that kind of stuff about it. You have something that can only answer in English, it answers in German. You have knocks on ceilings. I had knocks that answered me repeatedly on my asking. Everything. It's just everything about that place. It is truly the most haunted house that I've ever spent an entire night in.
Huh. Interesting.
Okay, Don, when you were starting out, let's go back many, many moons ago. When you were just starting out and really starting to learn what was going on and what you were able to do and all that, who did you look up to? Who was your mentor, if you will? Who did you really, I don't want to say try to mold yourself around, but I guess the best term would be mentor, you know, in the paranormal type field, and understanding that, I mean, you and I are about the same age, so, you know, way back when, who was there? You know, what kind of things did you really try to gravitate to really try to hone things down?
Yeah, you know, I never really had that much knowledge of it growing up because, like, I shut it off back in the 60s. You were a freak with that kind of stuff. I remember back in the 70s and stuff, Uri Geller and bending keys, and, of course, I tried to do that, and it got carried away to the point where my wife's keys would bend in her purse, and we had to hammer them out all the time, so I had to stop doing that. Probably the most that I respected in the field would be Peter James. I always respected Peter James. I never got to meet the man, but I now am friends with John Temporelli, who carries on for Peter in his book and tries to share Peter's life with everyone. Probably, I guess, like that. Current nowadays people, like I've said, people that I respect Barry Fitzgerald. He's a very honest, very, very caring person. He believes in what he's doing. He does the best that he can, and I really respect that in him, and I like him. As far as people that are psychics, like I've said, Chris Fleming, out of all the people I've ever met, and when I shake hands, I do try to read them. He's the only one that when I went to read him, he immediately said something and knew I was reading him, and I could feel he was reading me. A lot of the things that Chris picks up on and can do, I've had happen to me over the years, and he's young enough to be my son. And yet, it's almost like he's mirroring what I did as I grew up through his age. Of course, he's doing it with a lot more attention than I ever had. But I really respect Chris Fleming, too. And like I say, by meeting him, I honestly, when I shook his hand, I knew he was very sincere.
Now, Chris Fleming is one of the people that I've actually, you know, never investigated with. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Chris Fleming is actually one of the people that I've never investigated with. But, you know, I've heard so many people talk about him, you know what I mean? And it's like, he's like one of the people that I've actually, you know, have to investigate with now.
Yeah, Chris is a very strong personality, and I don't take that one way or the other. He's a great person. I like him. Some people might think that he's showboating or overdoing things. That is not the case. I know from seeing him, meeting him, doing things with him, he is definitely sincere. He definitely is a sensitive psychic. He definitely does his best. He doesn't try to lead you on to believe something that is not something he truly believes in.
Okay, Don, in your opinion, if somebody had somebody just starting out, just starting to get interested in the field and really wanting to learn and do things right, in your opinion, what is one piece of equipment that you use in the field of paranormal investigating that is the most valuable for collecting the evidence and that comes the closest to validating your feelings as an empath or psychic, if you want to use that word, and also have any ever captured what you felt or even come close?
Well, not a technical piece of equipment, but common sense is the biggest thing everybody should starting out should use. When a door is closing on its own, use common sense. If you open the door up and the wind's blowing through the window and the door closes on its own, there's your answer. Don't try to make too much out of something. On probably in the high 90 percentile of things that you check out, there's a logical explanation. As far as electronic items or something that I think that people really need, you know, the temperature gauges are nice and the meters are nice and the boxes are all great and all that, but you know what? There's just no substitute for a cheap old RCA digital audio recorder. You don't spend much money. It's cheap. It doesn't have any filters on it. You know, and you play it back, and you hear these things. And sometimes, like, you know, there's different classes of EVPs. I've heard them all. I've heard everything from Debbie Constantino up at Wolf Manor. She asked a question, do you miss your friends and family? We played it back, and out loud, not whispered, out loud, it said, God damn you, just like that. And then I've heard once before where it was like, get out, you know, like that. And you've got to put them on things and amplify them and everything else. So I think just a plain digital audio recorder, a cheap one, is a great piece of equipment for you to work with. And please take the precautions when you do this to, like I say, don't let something trick you. It's not always a good thing that's out there. It might pretend to be, but if you're getting, like, answers like a Ouija board, which I don't use and I stay away from, don't turn your recorder into a Ouija board.
Right. Don, I want to stick a note out there on top of what you said, too.
Hey, Barry, we've got about 2 minutes.
Okay, I fully agree with what you're saying about somebody getting out there and they can get a nice basic recorder. And the key thing is, guys, on that point, whatever the device is, learn all about it as much as you can, how to use it properly. If you're new to the field, have somebody who's experienced show you how to use it in the field, because that will lead you to success. Just want to stick that on there, Jeff. A lot of folks,
definitely,
I think.
Definitely. Very good, Barry.
Yeah, they tend to use
it. Well,
Don,
I want to thank you very much for coming on the show with us tonight. We've loved having you on. We'd love to have you come back. Definitely got to get out there and all of us get together with you and go on some investigations and let everybody else meet you. But again, I want to thank you again for coming on. Anything else in quick closing you want to say?
No, just thanks for having me on. You know, we've investigated together before. And there may be some time in the very near future when I'm driving over your way. So if I do, I'll let you know, and maybe we can head out somewhere and check something out.
No, buddy, that's not a maybe. That is a definite. Count on it. Definite.
Well,
all right, everybody. We want to thank Don Staggs again for coming on with us tonight. This is TGAF.TV Radio. Please, everybody, make sure you go to www.tgaph.tv. Check out the website, like us on Facebook, and you're on liveparanormal.com with History FM. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you, everybody.
LP Web Design. 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit liveparanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars.